Now, in the Old Testament times, it wasn't easy to be a prophet. You might think that these prophets got their words from God and just went and delivered the message, but no, they had to undergo a great deal of training from God before they were able to deliver their message. And what God asked them to do was often rather strange and difficult. You might have seen the program Taskmaster, and that has nothing to what God asked the prophets to do. I mean, look at Abraham, for example. He was told by God that he had to have a son, and the problem was that he and Sarah couldn't have any children, and the NHS fertility services were not very good in the Middle East 3,500 years ago. So this was a big problem for them, and they tried all sorts of crazy things. And in the end, the child, Isaac, was born when Abraham was 100 years old. And you can imagine how much that child meant to them. And then God asked him to go and kill Isaac when he was a few years older. What a difficult thing that was. And of course, we know God saved Isaac, but that was some of his training. Ezekiel, he had to do many strange things, including lying on one side for several weeks. And then after quite a few weeks, he was allowed to turn over and lie on the other side. And then he had to burn his hair. So all this is very strange, but it built the prophets up to do their task. David, his training included being pursued by 10,000 armed men for several years who got orders to kill him. And that certainly made him very resourceful. And so I thought that really, as we talk about the prophets, that I ought to try and get into the frame of mind. And although not up to those sorts of things, you may remember a few years ago, I'm sure very few of you will, but I brought a vine into church and said I was going to start my vineyard. Well, I did. I planted the vine in the vineyard. The garden, and I made arrangements for bottling the wine, and I was hoping for lots of produce. What I was really hoping for was lots of these. There we are. But I've not got any. I was hoping in the end to have some of this as well, but no, none of that. Last year, I went out and looked in the garden, and there were a couple of little flowers on it, which were rather pretty, but that was it. Yesterday, it just looked like a dead twig. And despite all we'd done for it, I'd planted it, and Enid had looked after it a bit. I can't say I did a lot, but she worked on it. And we gave it sunshine, well, as much sunshine as you can get in stone. It's not the south of France. And so I've been rather disappointed in my vine, and so I begin to sympathise with some of the Old Testament prophets who obviously were a bit concerned about their vines. And Andy's helpfully put up some pictures in the foyer of some rather nice vineyards, but the Old Testament prophets weren't looking at anything quite as good as that, were they? And it doesn't take much deciphering to see that the prophets actually weren't talking about grapes, were they? Grapes were not the thing that was on their minds. And you remember that in Psalm 80, we saw that there was a vine brought from Egypt. And so we know what that was. We know what came from Egypt. That was the children of Israel coming back from their long exile in Egypt. And they were the vine that God planted. And then Isaiah told us quite clearly who was who in this story. He said in verse 7 of Isaiah 5 that we looked at, and you can't have it much clearer than this, "The vineyard of the Lord Almighty is the house of Israel, and the men of Judah are the garden of his delight. He looked for justice but saw bloodshed." So he was looking for grapes, but instead he got bad things. "He was looking for righteousness but heard cries of distress." So when Jesus starts talking about a vineyard, we can soon realise that this is not a random industrial concern that he's mentioned. the vineyard is something very significant. So the vineyard at that time was understood to be the country of Israel, and in particular, the country of Israel serving God. And Jesus, of course, enlarged the vineyard a bit. He said that he'd come to speak to the Gentiles as well. So when we come to Matthew 20, you can see we should know a lot about this vineyard already. And in fact, Jesus wasn't finished with the vineyard. He went on in the next chapter to be very provocative and quite excoriating about the Pharisees in another story about the vineyard, whose interpretation was pretty simple, pretty clear. And it's probably that vineyard story was one of the things that led to him being crucified. But anyway, we've got this vineyard story about the jobs in the vineyard. So I thought I'd research jobs in vineyards as well, and I was quite interested to see that there are a couple of jobs going in vineyards in this country, should you wish to apply for them at the moment. There's one in Penzance, where you'll be offered £8.25 an hour, but you need forklift truck driving experience. It seems a bit odd for vineyard. And there's one in Maidstone, where the pay is very slightly higher, £9.50 an hour. And for that, you need 2 years' experience of driving a tractor. So there you are, if anybody wants, you can apply for those jobs in the vineyard. And I thought I'd also look up the employment rights of the workers in the vineyard, because you remember Jesus made a rather special point about having some strange payment arrangements for his workers. And I discovered that you are actually allowed to pay people different pay for the same job, the same work, provided there's no element of discrimination against gender or sexual proclivity or disability or nationality or religion or anything like that. So I suppose one could imagine a workforce of white heterosexual men with no disabilities to whom you could arrange to have different rates of pay, but I don't think it would go down very well. And it didn't in Jesus' story. But you remember I've said this before, that all Jesus' parables have something in common, and that is, I'm sure you remember, you are in it. So, who are the people in the vineyard? Well, we've discovered that the vineyard is, of course, the country of Israel, or in Jesus' explanation, the world, really. So the world is the vineyard, and it's God's world, if you remember. And who is it who's handing out the jobs in the vineyard? Well, clearly that's God. He's got jobs for people to do in the vineyard. And there's one interesting thing. We've got a day. You remember the workers were employed for up to one day. But I think it's pretty clear that that day does not mean one day. That means the whole of your life. So we now have the vineyard, which is God's world. We have God wanting workers in the vineyard, and he's offering these workers a job for life. So where do we come into it? Well, of course, we're the workers. And the workers, you remember, were found lounging around in the marketplace. And they seem to have no qualifications. They seem to be all equal. So you may feel that you are better qualified in some way than some others for whatever job God has in store for you. But it looks like these workers had no real qualifications. None of them was any more special than any other. Jesus was never too keen on reinforcing our pride when we come into his parables. In fact, you're quite lucky in this one that you get to be a worker. In some of his other parables, you might have been some soil or something like that. So in this parable, you do actually get to be a worker who can do some work. So that's not too bad. So some workers have worked in this vineyard all day for God. And maybe you feel that you've worked all your life in God's vineyard, and that you might deserve more than other people because you've worked harder and for longer. But sadly, what Jesus is telling us is that there's only one wage, and it doesn't matter how long you work, you only get the same wage. So just like in the parable of the lost son, it's easy for those people who've been in the church for a very long time and have done an awful lot of work and worked very hard and well, there's no criticism of the work that's done, they might feel that they're more deserving than somebody who just wanders in at the last minute. But no, there's only one wage for working in God's kingdom. Maybe you're somebody who's only just joined up, maybe quite late in your life. Well, it's good for you, because you're going to get the same wage as those who've been working in the church for all of their lives. So you see, that's not bad news for you, is it? But in fact, there is only one wage, isn't there? Because what is it that Jesus is paying at the end of the day? In this vineyard, the wages are not money. You don't get a denarius when you've worked all your life in the church. What you get is eternal life, a place in the kingdom of heaven, which, as we know, starts before you die. It doesn't come only when you die. It starts as soon as you join up. You can have your place in heaven. So that is the reward that the workers in the vineyard are going to get. And if you are a worker in the vineyard, that's what you're going to get. And we're all going to get the same. There's no preferential treatment for anybody who's more important in the church, a bishop or anybody like that. We're all the same. Which is good news, isn't it? And there may be some people still in that marketplace who've not joined up yet. You remember that the master went out several times into the marketplace to look for more workers, and he went at the 11th hour, which is when it's almost getting dark, the very last chance. So maybe you're still stood there in the marketplace, undecided who you're going to work for. You've seen the offer of work from Jesus, but you've not yet accepted. Well, the good news for you is that it's not too late yet. There is still time to join Jesus' workforce and to receive the payment the same as everyone else. But there is one thing that we do notice in this story, that the payment was only made at the end of the day, wasn't it? Those who started at the first hour, as soon as it was dawn, but got fed up and went home, they don't get paid. So I think it's an interesting thing that the payment for this work only comes at the end. And it saddens me sometimes to see people who've been in the church for many, many years and then suddenly get fed up, somebody upsets them, or they just lose their faith in the face of criticism and mockery from the rest of the world and give up after many years. And I know a few people who've done that, and it's very sad. Because what we see is that the wages are paid at the end of the day. So we should be sure that we're going to be there at the end of the day. Now, last week, you may remember, back in Matthew 7, we heard about the narrow gate that leads to eternal life and the wide way that leads to destruction. And this is a bit more clarification from Jesus about what that narrow way is. It means being one of the workers in the vineyard. It doesn't mean having particularly good theology. It means being part of Jesus' workforce. And so the question for us is not how clever or how skilled or gifted we are. The question is, are we part of Jesus' workforce? And are we going to stick at it until the end? That's the question. And that's how we get eternal life. Now, we don't normally in church hand out advice on how to get into hell, but there has been quite a lot of this recently. You may have noticed that Donald Tusk has been offering advice on how to get into hell, and he seems to be quite an expert on this. You remember on February 6th, he said that there was a special place in hell reserved for those who proposed Brexit without even a suggestion of a plan. Well, on Friday, another British journalist asked him whether hell would have to be made a bit bigger to accommodate all the MPs who were voting against Brexit. And in answer to the journalist's question, Donald Tusk elaborated, obviously been giving some thought on this, First of all, I have to say that the Brussels officials had offered the interpretation that this place in hell would only be when the Brexiteers died. It didn't mean they were going to hell immediately. But then Donald Tusk went on to say that he'd consulted the Pope over this. This is what he said. And he said that according to the Pope, hell was still empty, and therefore there was plenty of space for all those people who voted against Brexit. So you'd be surprised to know that the Bible doesn't actually tell us very much about how to get into hell. The reason for that is that Jesus is only concerned with one thing, and that is to tell us how to get eternal life. And the Bible is a very interesting document in that it tells us about ourselves, but it never tells us about other people. And you remember, this was made particularly clear by Jesus when one of his disciples asked if another disciple would live until Jesus came back. And Jesus said, well, he might live until I return. What's that to you? And so we, in reading the Bible, learn about how to get eternal life. There's not much advice on how to get into hell, but there's a lot of advice about how to get into heaven. And this bit from Jesus about the vineyard is one of the clearest bits of it, I think. It's simple for us. It's not a big, difficult theological question. It's not something that requires great agonizing over. It's a simple decision. Jesus is out there looking for people to join his workforce. Are you willing to join? Because the pay is as good as it gets, and you'll get just the same as all those who've worked all their lives. So what's wrong with joining that? Don't listen to Donald Tusk, who can only tell you how to get into hell. In the Bible, we find out how to get into heaven, and that's a much better thing to know.